When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My job is driving me crazy.
Sorry.
Do you hate your job or does your job hate you?
Sorry. Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
My career crisis.
This is My Career Crisis. I'm Ruth Barnes. And that's Sue over there. Hi, Sue Ahern.
Hello again.
Again. We have Roz in the studio. Hi, Roz.
Hello.
Roz has come to us from East Sussex on this Monday morning. Thanks for travelling all that way. You have got the most incredible title to the episode, I think. This is one of my favourite ones so far. 100 job applications and counting. Just wonderful. Let's get straight into your story. You've spent 4 years working in project and client management for two London marketing agencies. You worked very hard to get into this job. You dreamt of doing it for years. However, and we've all been here, the reality of the job was much different to what you imagined. Even after promotions and working for a competitor to try and shake things up, you still ended up with just long hours, stress, and ultimately anxiety and misery followed. So you quit London. Tell us about what happened.
So I'd been working for two marketing agencies in London for 4 years, thinking that was my dream career path and it was something I'd wanted to get into since I was a child, really, at school, and decided I'm going to work in marketing and later defined this is the sort of area of marketing I want to work in. But the reality of doing that career path didn't really match up to this dream that I'd formed in my head. I went to a second agency in part to test whether the doubts I was thinking, is this right for me and am I happy, whether that was just tied up with my first employer and I just needed a change, or if, no, it was more related to the career path that I'd chosen and if that was not quite right. And 6 or 7 months had gone by at this new business I joined, and one day it was just something clicked, I suppose. I received a pretty horrible email from a client, and that was a good thing because that made me finally accept how bad a state I was in.
So let's get on to the 100 job applications and counting, which is what happened then, obviously, when you'd taken your break, you'd had that much needed peace of mind and been there for your mum, and just, you probably just thought to yourself, this is what life is about for a bit, just family and sorting your head out. And then you have to get back to work. So 100 job applications, was it really 100? Did you count them? Did you top them up?
I did top them up after I'd been treating job hunting and applications a bit like a full-time job.
Which is what you're meant to do, isn't it? Yeah.
Although in my case, I didn't have a full-time job. So I was trying to get a full-time job. And spent, 5 months scouring the internet for jobs that I felt I had transferable experience for.
Because obviously you weren't looking to go back into agency work, marketing work, right?
That was the one.
Was it really 100? Did you count them? Did you top them up?
I did top them up after I'd been treating job hunting and applications a bit like a full-time job.
Which is what you're meant to do, isn't it? Yeah.
Although in my case, I didn't have a full-time job, so I was trying to get a full-time job and spent, 5 months scouring the internet for jobs that I felt I had transferable experience for.
Because obviously you weren't looking to go back into agency work, marketing work, right?
That was the one thing I was really clear about. I felt because I'd tried two agencies, I felt that I'd kind of proved the point and got the T-shirt there, that I decided that is not something I want to return to, which was frustrating because that would have been the easiest thing for me to do. Once you've done a little bit of time at one of these places and you build yourself a good name, then it's quite easy to someone to come knocking on your LinkedIn inbox and say, oh, are you interested in having a coffee? And that happened. All these competitor agencies got in touch with me and I didn't go into the full details, but I explained, actually, no, I'm looking for a change. Thanks, but no thanks. But the sort of jobs I was applying for were related to projects that I'd delivered when I was working for these agencies. For example, something like an internal communications executive or specialist, because I had delivered some internal comms campaigns for clients. And all the jobs I went for were working client side, so actually in the marketing department of a business as opposed to an agency. All corporate sort of jobs.
Which makes a lot of sense, I think, to go in-house.
Yeah.
I think that would be a very natural step in the right direction.
Were any of the jobs that you applied for with clients that you had actually managed?
Yes, but only a couple. And I did have quite a few phone calls or conversations with old clients of mine who I did have good relationships with, or they pointed me in the direction of other people that they knew who might be hiring. So I was talking to people and trying to use my network. And I tried applying for roles that were more junior than my level that I'd kind of left behind, or at the same sort of level. A couple that were more senior, sort of reaching high, and yet I didn't feel that comfortable spending a lot of time applying for these senior jobs because I'd taken a real confidence knock, to be honest. And I counted up this 100 figure after I clocked up, it's been 5 months that I've been doing this.
How does it feel to write that many applications? You must have felt like you were going a bit mad after a while.
Yes and no. I had some down days where it just felt like I was getting absolutely nowhere and I couldn't see any kind of end to this process at all. For sure, there were some really low days. But I would quickly pick myself back up again and think, well, this is my mess. I've got to be the one to get myself out of it. It's up to me to keep going and no one's going to offer me a job if I don't find the job and apply for the job or talk to the right person.
And the interviews were coming in?
Slowly.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I only had about 8 interviews and that was a mixture of phone interviews, some more formal than others. Some face-to-face and one video interview I did.
This can't be uncommon, though, to send out that many applications and to only get a trickle of response and phone interviews. I mean, it just does my head in.
Yeah, but often for the first sort of round, they'll do that. But I think the key's in the 100, really, because that's an awful lot. And full of admiration for you, because it sounds like you took it so seriously. You did it in a really professional way. But was there an element of scattergun there in that you were trying to cast your bread on the waters to see what would come up that wasn't what you had known before? Is that a fair thing to say?
It was scattergun in the variety of jobs I was applying for. Because I'd come from an agency background and therefore had quite broad experience of delivering different kinds of projects for clients, like websites, like internal comms campaigns, advertising, events, the sort of broad range of experience I had meant I was looking for jobs to apply to that related to those different projects I delivered. So that was scattergun, I suppose. But I was really particular, almost too much so, arguably, and really considered about ensuring that every job I applied to had to tick some level of interest or fulfilment for me. I had to feel some kind of emotional connection to the employer, or failing that, think, well, this job could be interesting, because I didn't want to go back to a situation where I would just be miserable again just for the sake of getting a job and going back to some level of normality. I was kind of worried about just replacing like for like and ending up in another.
But it seems so. If you've got 100 applications and that only turned into 8 interviews, so obviously the applications weren't hitting the spot.
Yep.
And previous episodes, we've talked about the fact that we all have a generic CV, but we need to tailor it to every job, which I'm sure there was an element that you did that. Did you, for example, have job descriptions from the jobs that you were going for? Did you ask for any job descriptions?
Yes, in some cases. It depended where I'd come across the job that I was applying for. Sometimes if it was a job board and they were only advertising there, you might get a bullet point listing, which didn't really give much away. Sometimes the job description would be on the careers website of the employer. It kind of varied, but I never actually contacted someone before submitting that application and saying,
I would really encourage that.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes they haven't got one. They haven't got their act together. But also, you see, sometimes a lot of people who work, who are employed as managers in companies have not been trained to recruit properly. So HR will probably do a first, you know, trawl. And what they're looking for are keywords that's to say, oh, yes, they've already done that. And especially when you're making a move from a job that you have done to a job, it takes a leap of the imagination, which you can make very easily because you know yourself very well. They can't.
Mm.
So we have to make it really easy for people to give us an interview. And I've said previously that the whole purpose of a CV or an application form is to get you in front of people, because once you're there, you've got a much better chance.
Yeah.
So we had 8 successes. So you were asked to see people 8 times. Tell us about that.
Some of the companies were well known. I think everyone would have heard of those names. And the most consistent sort of structure that I found in face-to-face interviews was competency-based questions, which I would prepare for in advance if I knew that's what I was going to be facing.
What kind of question is that? Just give us an example.
This is what was quite difficult. Sometimes these questions are so very specific, it's hard to actually think of an answer that answers the question. So one company I interviewed for was Virgin Atlantic for a brand role. The one question was something like, can you tell us about a time when you've worked with multiple stakeholders, internally or externally or both, you decide, when there was a difficult task that you were managing and someone else interfered with the outcome of the project and you had to manage all these stakeholders?
Right.
So it's something like that. I'm kind of making that up a little bit.
No, I can't remember. And of course, you'd be sitting there getting bombarded with this. But the basic bottom line of that question is, how do you manage different interests?
Yes.
That's it. That's all it is. But I think, you know, what, you're a bit nervous because you're in an interview and you're asked that question and you forget your name. You know,
well, they've just said stakeholders 4 times and I'm immediately confused. I don't know what's going on.
But I think, you know, Ros was saying that she prepared very, very well done, because that's what you need to do. So the competency-based interviews, they will be saying that they need, there are certain competencies that they need you to have, you know. So there are going to be some generic ones like organisational ability, soft skills with people, managing people, budgetary control, stuff like that, which you can get from the job description. But the other thing I do is don't leave it until you have an interview. Something we may have mentioned previously, I'm a great believer in keeping a record of positive achievements all the time. So if, for example, in your job that you had previously, you had a very difficult situation where you had 2, I'm sorry, I have to say in inverted commas, stakeholders, you know, people who have conflicting interests, and you've managed to smooth that out, and I'm sure there's loads of examples when you've done that, then what you do is you make a note of it. So you get a little book, you write it down. You don't, the key to the book is there should be no negativity in it at all.
I like it. Your positive work diary, my work achievement diary or something.
And you don't have to do it every day. And it can, sometimes it can be really small things, you know. But there are 3 reasons for this. So the first is, if you have any kind of annual appraisal, it's a really good source book to go to. If you want to negotiate any kind of promotional pay rise, you can actually say, you know, things that you've achieved, make it achievement oriented. When you're filling in CVs, you've got a record of it. And sometimes you just have a shit day and it's quite good to have a look at it and say, I'm not a bad person. So win-win, really. But so if we thought, probably if we're talking about any kind of client-facing thing, there are going to be different interests, right? Now, can I think of some examples where I've managed different interests. And the thing is to provide yourself with examples. I've been in a situation before where a question has been asked. First of all, I don't think the person asking it made sense of it. But it was obvious that the candidate didn't exactly have that situation, exact situation. But why they were so good in the interview was they were saying, well, I haven't been in that exact situation, but what you were saying there makes me, it makes it sound like you're talking about managing different interests. Well, just last week, so you're turning it around to your own advantage. But if you're going to come out with all that jargon, but I mean, that's what you're wrestling with in interviews. You know, the key to good interviewing, I know I do training in interviewing, and the key to it is that you really relax the candidate and you speak in normal English to them. The reason for that is that if you're, there's an interview performance that people do. So if people are very nervous, they either become more of themselves or less of themselves. That's not actually helpful for me as the employer because I want an honest view of what Roz is like. So I know she's going to be a good candidate for my job. So it's their responsibility, but we need to know how to play that system.
And also, how honest are you in interviews? Like a question like, tell us about your, you know, your biggest weakness. I mean, where do you go with that? Were you ever asked that?
That was one of the questions that came up a couple of times, once with Virgin Atlantic, actually. But it was phrased, what's your biggest area of development, I think, rather than it being weakness specified. And I was honest. But I...
What did you say?
I felt it was a trap and I knew I haven't got the job.
So what did you say?
So I said, I don't like being thrown in at the deep end.
Yeah, probably not the best one to choose.
Yeah. Especially with a business like that that's... Well, there's an element of needing to be thrown in at the deep
I'm
end
sure
and being
just,
able to cope.
Yeah.
And
hit the ground running. That's the kind of language they want to be hearing. Yeah. Right?
I think it's a really lazy question because it plays into the hands of the bullshitter. You know, I shouldn't knock it. I've built a career on it. But, you know, I mean, I am very tempted sometimes to just say chocolate.
You know, what's your biggest weakness? I've seen examples of that.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
But obviously, and unless you've got people who've got the same sense of humour, that's not going to go down very well. I'm really not recommending that answer. But if there's a chance that it may come up, then I think you need to prepare it. Hmm. And so, for example, what I can honestly say about myself is that I am very passionate about what I do. And in the past, that passion has got in the way of logic and clear thinking. So that's something I work incredibly hard on all the time. Right, that's such a good answer.
Because you've basically turned a potentially very negative question with a negative answer into something very positive.
Absolutely. And it's true. It is true, actually. I don't want anybody to be telling lies. But take something which you know perhaps in the past you've struggled with, but you know you're okay with now, and then present that because that shows progress as well. It also shows a level of self-understanding, you know, analysis of yourself, which I think comes across very well. What is your strongest? I mean, often it's interesting, a lot of women find that very difficult to answer. So think of something and practice it in a mirror. And then when you go in, you can say it.
So you can say it confidently. My problem was always that I used to laugh after I'd make quite reasonable sounding statements and then just laugh.
So undercut
that's
yourself.
Ridiculous.
As if you're undermining.
It's embarrassment.
Yeah, you don't believe it.
Another thing that you can do, which I find works with some people, is if you say something like, I've been told that I'm... It takes the sting out of it. Mm. So I've been told that I'm actually very organised, or whatever it is you've been told, because I'm pretty sure if you scour your appraisals or you look at your positivity book, you'll find something that somebody commented on about your client service reputation or whatever it is. And then you can say, look somebody in the eye and you can say, well, I've been told that I'm very blah, blah, blah. And that somehow makes it better because you're not saying it about yourself.
Do you think that was the deal breaker question then? Is that what not that's what didn't get you the job, that question?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. You could see the light go out in their eyes.
And I didn't answer it well because I ended the sentence there. I said, I don't like being thrown in at the deep end, and I didn't
qualify it or
qualify and go on to say maybe what I was then advised later to say was something along the lines of, because I'm a really organised person, I like to work in quite a methodical sort of way. I like my ducks being in a row and feeling in control.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't like being thrown in the deep end.
Yeah.
I didn't really do that well enough. It obviously set off this red flag, and I could see one of the interviewers look at me saying, oh, alarmed. Well, why? And what do you mean? Have you ever experienced that before? What was that like? And
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So there are those sort of throwaway questions, like one that always floors people, and I absolutely don't know why, is why do you want to work for us?
Yes.
People look like rabbits in the headlight of a car, you know. Well, you know, you have applied. So it's those little inconsequential questions sometimes. Often that's seen as an icebreaker when somebody first comes into the room, you know, to settle them down. And they look as though they're trapped.
What do you say, though? I mean, what do you say without sounding like a total kind of brown noser? Why do you want to work for this company? I mean, without making it sound like, well, this is my life's goal. I always wanted to work for Virgin Atlantic. You know, they're going to know that you're exaggerating. How do you answer that in a genuine way?
Yes, it's got to be genuine. But what I would say is, well, what is the reason that you've applied? You know, it might be more money.
Can you say that?
Well, not in those words. I wouldn't encourage that. But what there is a reason. So first of all, if I was sort of coaching somebody, I'd say, well, what is the reason? You know, tell me honestly what the reason is. Then we can find a more palatable way of saying it. But also, I think often what candidates do is they talk all about themselves too much instead of what they can bring to the business. So instead of saying, well, if I hear one more time, I think I need a new challenge.
How nice for you.
Yeah, go and get therapy. But, you know, I've built up a steady reputation for working well with clients, sorting out problems. I think in my present job, I've reached the end of what I can do for them. So I've got to look at other things. And I think we're a good fit. I think, you know, and then you can portray some information you found out about the client, the people that you're interviewing for, you know, because I know you do blah, 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 blah. And I think that's that could fit quite well with the skills that I bring. And words like I can add value to are very good. Don't say what the job can do for you. Mm. Say what you can do for the job.
Hmm. That's excellent advice. Were there any other questions that really tripped you up, Roz?
Actually, do you know, one question that surprised me that I hadn't prepared for in advance was being asked, what would you focus on in the first 3 months of doing this job? And I'd never come across that in an interview before.
Good question.
And it actually was then extended to, it was a project manager 6-month fixed term contract with National Trust, and the question was specifically, besides project management, what would you focus on in the first 3 months of the job? And I asked the interviewer to rephrase it because I didn't quite understand.
Okay.
I sort of drew a bit of a blank. It seems quite obvious now what I might say, but at the time,
what would you say now?
I think what I did go on to say was I like context and learning, so I would want to start building up relationships across the business with different functions and understand the background as to why this person was needed in the project that was going to be delivered, what benefit it would have and how it would help people across the business, maybe learn some background or history on how the marketing function was set up, and they had their own in-house brand team, and that's becoming more popular, but I'd never really come across that before with clients I'd worked with. So I sort of focused on learning, information gathering would be my starting point.
I think the key is always people.
Yeah.
Right? So the first thing you do in any job is get to know the people, find out what makes them tick. You know, and can you hear the difference in the language that we're using? Because you're talking about project manager type ways, context, you said, which is all very important. But actually, often what's missing is the soft skills. It's about getting, it's with people. If you can convince people in the first couple of weeks that you're a jolly good thing, the rest of your life is going to be a lot easier.
My career crisis. My career crisis.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know.
Roz, so you've had a bit of a eureka moment in the last little while. And you've just, I love this because you're a real kind of positive, you've got a hugely positive take on your career crisis, and you've sort of come up with a strategy of how to get yourself out of this sort of crazy world you're in of job applications and annoying interviews. So tell us a little bit about what you've decided to do, the positive steps that you're taking.
Yeah. Well, it was after I counted up the 100 jobs in 5 months, and I couldn't help but think, well, there could be loads of reasons as to why I'm not getting anywhere. It might be me or other better quality candidates or Brexit or, you know, all kinds of things.
I blame everything on Brexit now.
You can, yeah. Mm. It's always an option. But aside from that, I couldn't help but feel like someone was trying to tell me something. There was a bigger reason why I wasn't succeeding, and actually maybe this was a blessing because, again, for the first time, really, I admitted to myself, well, actually, if I'm being really honest, I don't really want to be doing any of these sort of jobs, working for others in corporate environments. I'm applying for these jobs because I feel like I should, and I don't quite know where that should is coming from. If it's traditional family members or what, I'm not quite sure. But I felt like this is what I should be doing, do a proper, inverted commas, proper job in a corporate environment, and I will be considered normal again. So once I thought that, I considered, well, maybe instead of waiting for somebody to give me work and carry on with this application process for the next week or 5 months or year, I don't know how long it could take before someone hires me, maybe I should actually think about creating my own work. And I'd never really thought I would go down an entrepreneurial kind of route until that day when I thought of that, and it actually felt really good and something just clicked. It felt right. So instead of thinking about how can I use project experience that I've worked on and apply that to these companies I'm applying for, what other experiences do I have that I could maybe take into a new career path? And I considered that the most meaningful and rewarding experiences I've ever had have been in my social life and professional life as well, when I've helped people and made some sort of a difference. And I don't mean delivering a website for RBS, not that kind of helping people, but actually making some sort of improvement to someone's day or how they think or their life. And I considered, well, maybe instead of this being something that's quite special in my life and gives me a sense of purpose and meaning as to why I'm here, maybe I could take that into a career path. So I started looking into coaching as a potential option. And recently I went to a weekend taster kind of course, giving a bit of an overview as to what it's like to get a qualification in coaching and how it can be a career. And I felt like I was among my people, and it's sort of sounding really corny, but it was just absolutely fantastic. And I thought, I'm not going to lose the momentum, I'm going to pursue this. And I signed up to study a diploma with the body that I did this training course with, and that will be me studying for the next 6 months, maybe a little bit longer because it's structured in a part-time way. Once I've passed and I'm qualified, that'll mean hopefully I'll be able to, I might want to set up my own business to find clients that I can coach and make money from that skill set and that credibility of a qualification. That's been a really significant epiphany type moment, but I suppose I'm not there yet. I know I'm working towards that, so I'm headed in a positive direction, but the crisis isn't quite over yet, because in the meantime I need to be doing other things to make money and fill my time, because that's a part-time commitment.
It's wonderful to have found the thing that you want to be doing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously something I do, and it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
You've got to take a longer view on this. And when you qualify to be a coach, that's one thing, but then you have to get so many coaching hours under your belt to be properly qualified. And obviously, just for your own development, you have to have a supervisor who coaches you and all of that sort of thing. All of which I think, I mean, it sounds like, especially with your experience and your positivity, I think you could be really, really good at. Do you think, though, that I mean, obviously you've got to get a bit more of a day job, or at least a part-time day job, to help you with all of this. But do you not think also that your attitude towards that job might be quite different now, because it doesn't matter? It's not the be-all and end-all. It's a way of getting money to do what you really want to do long term. You see, when it's your full-time job and it's your career, it's so much more important. Most people who I know who work part-time are really happy people.
That's so true.
Because they go in and they see it in its right context. It's a job and it gives them money. But I'm just wondering, I mean, without wanting to stress you out again, you could get a job, couldn't you, to earn some money on a freelance basis as a client service manager. Obviously, you could pick and choose your job, so it's not as stressful as it was before. Is that something that you've considered?
Not for too long, to be honest. I know it is an option and it could be temporary, and I wouldn't have to see it as this indefinite, scary thing that will never come to an end. I think my concern is I'm worried about just diving straight back into the mess that I walked away from. But aside from that, the sort of emotional bit, I haven't done that sort of work for quite a while now. And coming back to the confidence issue, I would feel really quite daunted going back to that, thinking, oh God, well, I'm going to be really rusty and I don't know any of these people around me anymore. And
how important is the money? Do you have a figure that you have to earn?
It's quite important, but I'm lucky in that I don't have some commitments that would really tie people down, hence why I was able to walk away from the job. So, you know, I don't have a mortgage, I don't have children, I don't have those things to be concerned about.
But you definitely want it to be part-time.
Yes, I do. And that's partly because another project that I want to be focusing on, and this is really for my benefit, is to make use of all the learning that I have adopted while going through this career crisis. And subconsciously, I've ended up gathering a list of about 50 resources, like books or podcasts like this one, or TED Talks or speakers, or all kinds of things, content effectively, which supports people who aren't happy in their jobs but who don't know where to go next, or who want to do more meaningful work but don't know how to define that, or who want to walk away from corporate life. All these supportive tools are out there to help what I think is an increasing problem of just going headfirst into a career path and having a bit of a meltdown when realising they're not that happy in that. But I don't think there is one hub or one place where all this information is available. It's taken me 18 months to build up this list, and I would like to share that knowledge to help other people in what can be a really quite lonely time.
I think that's wonderful, but for free?
So this is something I'm thinking about. I would obviously need to fund the startup costs of setting up a website and hosting and things like that. That would be my own money. I'm wondering at the moment how I could get some income from it. I'm not thinking about big bucks, but maybe try and break even to cover the hosting costs and things like that. And I'm considering what those options might be at the moment, like sponsored content from some of the speakers, for example, that I'd like to include on this website.
Or subscription.
I need to spend a lot more time thinking about what those options are, because this is new territory to me to start a website from scratch and be in charge of the content and what happens with it.
I mean, in terms of the coaching and the website, I think that sounds like a really exciting future. But in the short term, you have to earn money.
Yeah.
So I think you need to be quite hard-headed about this, because if your lack of income means you can't achieve what you want to achieve and there are going to be expenses there, that's going to be such a shame. So I think you need to work out what hours, how many hours a week do I need to work, and what's my bottom line in how much do I need to earn? And then try and find a job that fits that. And it doesn't actually matter what it is.
No, exactly. You could do, I mean, I spent a long time doing some quite brain dead work years and years ago. But it was okay, because while I was there, I could work on all my other projects. So I'd just sit there doing all my other work and actually building a website at the time and doing a lot of writing on somebody else's time.
But also you finish at 6 o'clock or whenever it is, or you've got your prescribed hours so that you can just work really, you know, go in, give them a good couple of hours work and then come away. It could even be local because you're not based right in the middle of London. So there might not be any commuting, because obviously that adds expense and time to things. But it could be just a job that you could probably phone in, really, because of the level of expertise and experience that you've got. But I do think that's what, if, rather than thinking what's going to fulfill me, it doesn't matter if it doesn't fulfill you, because you've got a bigger dream. It's what do I need now? What are my priorities? It's to earn X pounds a week, and it's to only earn work for so many hours a week. And then we can fit something around that. And I think because you're setting your sights a little bit lower, it'll be easier.
Yeah.
Have you had any leads yet?
There's a few things sort of related to different things we've both talked about. Last year, in fact, I did a couple of lower skilled minimum wage type jobs. And one of those was working in my local gym, which is fun and quite sociable and easy work. And I'm still sort of on the books, as it were.
That sounds great, actually.
It was, it's good fun. So I, put my hand up to cover shifts when people are sick or on holiday. So that's an option, but not a very sustainable one, because it's just the odd bit of cover here and there.
I think you can set your sights a bit higher than minimum wage.
Yeah, there's she's become a friend who I used to work with, who has set up her own business with her husband, and they live quite near me. So they're working, just the two of them, with local smaller businesses than the sort of clients that we used to work with. And we've been in touch quite a bit recently, and she has said when some bigger projects come along and they can justify spending extra money on an extra pair of hands, then I feel confident that they'd be calling me up and would trust me to help. So I know that's sort of on the back burner, or that could come up in the future.
And also that's a really good niche for you, because, you know, if you've got a small business, they don't want to take somebody on that they've got loads of employment rights. But what you're saying is, no, I don't want a job. I'll come and do days for you. You pay me this much a day. That'll suit me.
It would be project-based,
yeah,
a week here and there, or a month, whatever the need is. So I know that's something that's possible or likely to come up in the future. Another option is, I did some work on this last year, of proofreading, which is for me a very easy task to do, but for others it's quite difficult, and that's why they're comfortable outsourcing it and paying somebody to do that service. So again, I had a conversation with another old colleague a few days ago who's ditched client services sort of work and gone into freelance proofreading, and he gave me a lot of pointers about how I can put myself out there and start to get some leads, so that, again, do project-based type work, like annual reports for the FTSE 100 companies and that kind of thing. So I know I need to put some work into that, but that's, again, something I hope.
And I think just in terms of priority, I mean, first of all, the question I have to ask is, why on earth did you think you needed our advice? Because it sounds to me like you are so sussed, you've done all the right things. But I think this is about priorities now. If you can get a regular income stream established, that's the priority at the moment, because that will free you up to do so many other things. And that lead on, I mean, I can't imagine me ever reading annual reports. I haven't got the attention span. But I mean, if you've got a knack for that, that's so fantastic. It'll pay quite well as well. And that'll free you up to do all those other really exciting things.
Well, if you have any advice for Roz, or you like the sound of her and you want to hire her, then get in touch. You can contact us, info@chalkandblade.com. We always want to hear from you, or tweet us at My Career Crisis. Roz, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been
keep
lovely.
Us updated on how
yeah.
you get on. And
thanks
we'll,
so much.
When your website launches, you know, we'll buy some advertising space. But thank you so much for coming on, and we will be back soon with another Career Crisis. Thanks for listening.
My Career Crisis.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.